It's tempting to sort the world into neat categories. Plastic is bad, recycling is good, but reality is messier and far more interesting. If you clicked on this video expecting a guilt trip about how terrible plastic is and how we're all terrible people for using it, well, that's not what we're doing today. The focus of today's video is not plastic and the environment. Instead, we're taking a step back from the usual plastic equals pollution narrative to look at plastic through a different lens, climate change. And when you shift that lens, some surprising truths emerge. For instance, what if I told you that recycling plastic might be doing more harm than good for the climate? And that in many cases, the best thing we can do with plastic is to give it a proper burial. We'll also look ahead. What happens to plastic in a post-oil world when the cheap petrochemicals it depends on start to dry up? And are there technologies on the horizon that might finally give us alternatives? Hi, I'm Resi Barnes, founder of Puddlet Consulting. We advise on clean energy technologies, assisting startups with their development and helping investors assess the landscape. Welcome to Engineering with Resi. Today, rather than viewing plastic as strictly good or bad, I invite you to adopt a more nuanced perspective with me and see where we land. Before we dive in, a quick shout out to the amazing Engineering with Resi Patreon team who make this kind of deep dive content possible. Your support means I can take on more honest topics like this one, where the answers aren't always neat or marketable, but they matter. You can join us on Patreon, and I have just added YouTube membership as another option to join the team. You probably all know by now that millions of tons of plastic enters the environment every year. That's a staggering amount of plastic rubbish, and nearly all of us contribute to this issue. You probably also know that plastic pollution poses a significant threat to marine ecosystems, wildlife, and human health. But if you haven't heard, you might be surprised to learn that a large portion of the plastic we produce breaks down into microplastics. Microplastics are so widespread that they've been found in clouds, in our water supply, even in human brains and hearts. The term placenta has been recently introduced to describe the presence of microplastics in human placentas. The worst part? Our plastic problem will linger for hundreds, if not thousands of years. For plenty of legitimately good reasons, plastic gets a bad rap. Pun intended. Plastic tends to get lumped in with fossil fuels as a climate problem. Why is that? Probably because over 99% of plastics are made from petrochemicals, which are derived from fossil fuels like oil and gas. They are not a byproduct of oil and gas development, but rather a product made from the raw materials extracted from fossil fuels. But not all plastics are created equal. Some plastics hold critical jobs and are practically irreplaceable. And many of our plastic products can actually help reduce the greenhouse gas emissions contributing to climate change. Life cycle assessments of plastics indicate that often, using plastic products leads to lower greenhouse gas emissions overall when compared to materials like paper, metal, or glass. Why is that? It's largely due to the lightweight nature of plastic, as well as production efficiency and the end-of-chain benefits of using plastics, such as reduced waste and spoilage, as well as energy-saving effects. Let's look at a few examples. Some plastic-wrapped fruits and vegetables, such as cucumbers, last longer than unwrapped ones, which reduces food waste, a significant source of emissions. Especially at the retail level, plastic wrap maintains food freshness by creating a barrier against moisture loss and oxygen exposure. A 2022 study found that shrink-wrapping cucumbers imported from Spain to Switzerland reduced retail losses by approximately 5%. You may have noticed an increase in alternatives to plastic food wrappers appearing in your grocery store. While paper and compostable barriers are made from renewable sources that have greater potential to be biodegradable, recyclable, or compostable, they often fail to offer the same level of protection as plastic. Their production processes, bulkiness, and weight can lead to higher transportation footprint. And as far as climate is concerned, the heavier our food products and the more food waste we create, the higher CO2 footprint, or should we say, food print. In terms of energy production, wind turbine blades made from plastic composites are stronger, lighter, and more aerodynamic than older aluminium designs, which are prone to early fatigue failure. Additionally, aluminium blades are more costly and difficult to shape compared to those made from plastic. Again, where climate is concerned, less efficient, more expensive wind turbines would result in reduced wind energy production. You know what that means, an increase in fossil fuel generation. Another example of where plastics pack a powerful climate change reducing punch? Plastic composites also reduce the weight of cars and aircraft, improving energy efficiency. And I bet you can guess what I'm going to say next. Heavier metal vehicles use more energy to operate, and more energy means higher CO2 emissions. Finally, foam-based plastic insulation in buildings improves thermal efficiency, reducing the energy need for heating and cooling. Materials like mineral wool and other natural fibres can be bulkier and less efficient per millimetre, resulting in less efficient heating and cooling and an increase in overall energy and therefore CO2 emissions. These examples demonstrate how plastic can be a practical component of solutions that reduce greenhouse gas emissions. From a climate perspective, plastics might not be as problematic as we often assume. Given the many benefits plastics can offer the world, if we manage their life cycle properly, we can minimize or even eliminate end-of-life emissions. The issue with plastics is complex, but the core problem is pollution, not emissions. In fact, many popular solutions to address plastic waste, such as recycling, may exacerbate our climate challenges. Before diving into why recycling may not be the ideal solution for our plastic problem, let's examine how recycling became such a popular approach for managing plastic waste. Reusing and repurposing items isn't a new concept. Throughout history, humans have been resourceful with their natural materials. In prehistoric societies and among indigenous cultures today, people have used every part of an animal, hides, bones, and sinews alike. Nothing was wasted. When tools broke, they weren't thrown away, they were reshaped into something new. Around 400 BC, people in ancient Athens melted bronze objects to repurpose them, a process called chrysoreus. Along with the Greeks, the Romans also recycled metal and glass, resources that were considered scarce and valuable. The ancient Romans also repurposed stones called spolia from their buildings and other structures. Looking at the history of paper recycling, the ancient Egyptians repurposed worn-out papyrus scrolls for various purposes, including making mats, boxes, and baskets, as well as creating rope and sandals. However, the earliest recorded practice of recycling paper dates back to the 9th century in Japan. Believe it or not, recycled paper was valued higher than new paper in ancient Japan. In addition to practical and economic reasons, Japanese culture values the beauty that comes with age and wear. The Japanese find deep value in the old and unused, which aligns with an aesthetic principle found in Japan called wabi-sabi, a love for the imperfect, transient, and incomplete. Before the development of modern recycling strategies, materials such as paper, cloth, and metal were recycled within local communities in medieval Europe. And in pre-industrial times, metals such as scrap bronze were collected and melted down for continuous reuse. Individuals also collected and sold scraps for reuse in what was known as the rag and bone trade. The British also collected dust and ash from fires as a base material for brickmaking. Fast forward now to the second wave of the Industrial Revolution, where plastics enter center stage. Early forms of plastic, such as parkosine or celluloid, date back to the late 1800s, followed by Bakelite, which was invented by Leo Baekeland and emerged in 1907. The modern era of plastics as we know it today began in the 1950s. Plastic production and use, especially in packaging and construction, skyrocketed after World War II. The sudden, rapid rise of plastic led to significant increase in plastic waste, and by the 1970s, a significant shift in environmental consciousness occurred. Fueled by events like the first Earth Day in 1970 and the passage of the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act in the US in 1976, growing public concern about resource conservation, waste disposal, and pollution spread rapidly. This led to the popularization of the three R's: reduce, reuse, and recycle. Despite the reduce, reuse, recycle mantra and campaigns around it, recycling has, for the most part, been ineffective at offsetting the impact of rising global plastic production. Why is that? For many people, recycling is the easiest action of the three R's to participate in. It's a super tangible activity that gives us agency with the reward of an instant dopamine boost, or at least I get a little boost when I put something in the recycling instead of in the rubbish. It doesn't really require much time or effort. We get to see the recycling bin fill up faster than the rubbish bin, and it's like a gold star chart from kindergarten for adults. But are you tempted to throw things into your recycling bin that you suspect can't be recycled? Like, I'll admit that I am. I struggle with what to do with things like bottle caps and the plastic punnets that berries and cherry tomatoes come in. If you struggle with the rules of your recycling rubbish bins and it's causing you a bit of anxiety, I get it. You're not wrong to have those feelings, and I'll come back to why following recycling rules is so important a little later. Another reason recycling became such a popular solution for dealing with plastic? For the most part, it requires much less effort than actively reducing one's consumption or finding creative ways to reuse things. But don't be fooled. Recycling is also a kind of genius marketing strategy. It's often presented as a solution for the guilt we feel for being consumers who produce so much rubbish, making us more likely to consume even more, simply because we know an option to recycle is available. Another brilliant part of recycling's marketing position? It shifts the responsibility of the solution onto consumers and away from manufacturers. But recycling is a wizard behind a plastic curtain. The first two R's, reduce and reuse, are much more impactful at solving our environmental challenges and slowing climate change. Reduce, reuse, and recycle were not meant to be treated as equally effective strategies. They're part of a rubbish management hierarchy where recycling, the last of the three R's, is the last line of defense before throwing an item into the rubbish so it can be sent off to an incinerator or landfill. Now, what if I told you that in many instances, recycling an item can be worse for the climate than sending it to a properly managed landfill? To date, humans have produced approximately 10 billion tons of plastic. Sadly, only a very small amount of that has been recycled. The truth is, global recycling rates are abysmally low at 9%, while plastic production has grown exponentially, from 2 million tons in 1950 to the current annual figure of 400 million tons. And public perception of what we think is being recycled is about 5 times higher compared with what is really being recycled. In the case of plastics and climate change, recycling is part of the problem. Let's break that down further. Mechanical and chemical recycling processes, the two primary methods for recycling plastic, are major energy consumers, and both contribute to greenhouse gas emissions. Mechanical recycling is a process that involves sorting, cleaning, shredding, and melting plastic waste to transform it into new materials or products without significantly altering its chemical makeup. It uses a lot less energy, but produces lower grade plastic from fewer feedstock options than chemically recycled plastic does. Because the output can have inconsistent properties due to contamination and degradation introduced during the recycling process, or due to simple differences in the composition of source plastics, it's nearly always necessary to add virgin plastic to the final product to meet the required specifications for strength and flexibility. An example of a commonly mechanically recycled plastic is your recycled PET water or milk jug. These are number one plastics, and they typically have a 70-30 ratio of recycled to virgin plastic. Most plastics that get recycled are PETEs, that's your soft drinks, water juice, and oil containers, as well as HDPEs, which include milk jugs, personal care, and cleaning products. These plastics are labeled with a number one or two respectively. Unfortunately, higher numbered plastics largely bypass our recycling systems entirely. As for chemical recycling, it's way worse for the climate than mechanical recycling, as it uses so much energy, but it's being touted by the plastic industry as the next big breakthrough and a way out of our plastic problems. So what is it exactly? Chemical recycling is a process for breaking down plastic waste into raw materials such as plastic monomers and other feedstocks to produce plastics, fuel, waxes, or other chemicals. It's often a good fit for a wider variety of feedstocks, such as hard-to-recycle plastics with higher numbers than mechanical recycling can tackle. While it differs somewhat from incineration, the burning of waste for energy, some chemical recycling processes aim to produce fuel from plastic waste, and that's burned, so essentially another form of incineration. Unfortunately, the chemical recycling label is being used to make incineration seem more environmentally friendly, but it's not. Some studies indicate that only 0.1% to 6% of chemically recycled plastic waste is converted into new plastic products. The hard truth is that most of it is incinerated, or, you guessed it, ends up in landfills. And when it's incinerated, all that stored carbon in the plastic molecules becomes CO2 emissions in the atmosphere. So far, we've shown that not all plastics are created equally. While many plastics pose wide-reaching environmental threats that can't be ignored, there are plenty of plastics doing good in the world. A subset of those contribute to a reduction in climate-impacting emissions behind the scenes. Without plastics, many of our climate change problems are exacerbated. We've also shown that, for the most part, plastics aren't being recycled effectively, and that the best solution we have for handling our mountain-sized plastic problem isn't working. Most plastic waste is not recycled and instead ends up at an incinerator or in a landfill. And there's not a lot to love about landfills, but what if I told you that well-managed landfills are a better climate solution for our plastic rubbish than recycling is? What if we face the fact that most plastic rubbish is going to end up in a landfill, regardless of our best recycling efforts, and instead gave our plastic a proper burial? I know, that probably sounds a bit grim. Picturing endless mountains of rubbish piled into landfills isn't exactly inspiring. It's not one of humanity's more flattering habits. But stick with me, there is a solid case to be made here, I promise. Properly managed landfills prevent plastic from entering oceans and natural ecosystems. Approximately 90% of ocean plastic originates from mismanaged waste in low-income countries, primarily through rivers in Asia, East Africa, and the Caribbean. And these countries aren't solely to blame. Many more advanced nations are shipping their waste overseas, literally dumping them in other countries' backyards. And those backyards don't have as good landfill as we do. Plastic pollution takes over where local waste management is poor. And where there is mismanaged plastic waste, you are guaranteed to eventually find it in a river. But by using a layered system with engineered liners, well-managed landfills collect leachate, that's the rainwater mixed with hazardous chemicals that leach out of the rubbish, and they manage methane gas, preventing contamination of groundwater and air. They can also recover energy from the gases produced during waste decomposition. It's important to note that decomposing rubbish in landfills contributes roughly 20% of human-caused methane emissions. And since methane makes up about 16% of global greenhouse gases, that means landfills account for roughly 3.3% of total global CO2 equivalent emissions. For comparison, agricultural sources of methane, such as cow manure, are about three times that, about 30% of methane emissions. In theory, we can capture all of the methane from landfill. However, the reality today is that a substantial amount of it still escapes. According to GHG Sat, a leader in greenhouse gas monitoring, they suggest we could cut human-caused methane emissions by up to 45% by 2030 using existing technologies and targeted strategies. The Global Alliance for Incinerator Alternatives adds that better waste management alone could deliver a nearly 13% reduction in global methane emissions. But there's one big caveat when it comes to landfills: space. In countries like Australia and much of the US, landfill capacity isn't yet a pressing issue. But globally, it's another story. Many regions, especially in Europe, are already struggling to find room for new landfill sites. And clearly, relying on landfills alone, even well-managed ones, isn't a scalable or sustainable solution to our plastic problem. So, is a post-plastics world even possible? And if so, what would it take to start weaning ourselves off this material? Improving waste management is essential if we're ever going to tackle our plastic problems. A global shift towards well-managed landfills, combined with better waste collection systems, and a push towards circular economy models, where plastic operates in more of a closed loop, could significantly reduce plastic pollution and the emissions that come with it. Many companies are already working towards this vision, but before we get swept up in solutions, let's revisit a key idea. While it's really tempting to put things into neat categories like plastic is bad or recycling is good, good versus bad thinking is a lazy simplification that serves our egos more than the climate or the environment. As I mentioned at the start, plastics can prevent food waste, help reduce fuel usage, and produce clean electricity. So when you're standing at your recycling and rubbish bins fretting over what to do with that tomato punnet, remember, it's so much better for a piece of plastic rubbish to end up in a well-managed landfill than to risk contaminating the recycling stream, potentially leading to entire batches being rejected, incinerated, or even shipped overseas to countries with inadequate waste management. If you want to make a difference, stick closely to your local recycling guidelines. Tossing non-recyclables into the bin in protest doesn't change the system, it just makes it harder and costlier to run and lowers the quality of the recycled plastic that does make it through. Misplaced plastic, whether it ends up in the wrong bin or on the wrong continent, often escapes proper disposal entirely. And when it lands in the ocean, the cost is counted in emissions, ecosystems, and animal lives. I've just talked about how a lot of so-called solutions don't always live up to the hype, and that reminds me of something in my own work. I've made so many attempts over the past 2 years to automate all the fairly mindless repurposing of content that it eats up hours of my time every week. That's stuff like turning my human written scripts into a blog for my website or a LinkedIn post. And until now, AI has just consistently wasted even more of my time to give me absolutely nothing I can use. Until now, I've just had an early preview of the brand new Gamma 3.0. And this one actually works. It's their biggest update since their AI launch in 2023. And my favorite feature is a new Gamma agent that is an AI design partner. It takes my own content, my words, my fact-checked facts, and builds it into finished content. Let's say I wanted to give a presentation on this plastics topic. Watch this. Gamma 3.0 is turning this video script into a nice looking slide deck in seconds. No hallucinations, and most importantly, in my own tone. I can tell it to keep my exact words or to condense them. I can incorporate a brand theme, add diagrams where needed, or swap in my original graphics. This is the AI design partner I've been waiting for, and you can try it for free at gamma.app. Now, back to plastic. By 2023, global plastic production had reached a staggering 415 million tons with a market value of $600 billion. By 2032, this is projected to soar to $870 billion, a 4.1% annual increase. Plastic is made from oil, and as we transition to renewable energy and electric cars, cheap petrochemicals will dissipate because we don't need the oil for those other things. Are we really going to continue to operate oil refineries solely for plastic production? Hopefully not. So what would it take to reduce our dependence on plastics? And which plastics should we prioritize eliminating? Some emerging technologies offer hope. Bioplastics are being created from food waste. Microorganisms can convert food waste into fats, which are in turn processed into bioplastics. This fermentation-like process offers a more sustainable alternative to traditional plastics, reducing reliance on fossil fuels and potentially minimizing plastic pollution. Another innovation, photoreforming, is a new method for converting plastic waste into clean hydrogen and other valuable chemicals. But I need to be clear. Legitimate substitution would require major systems overhauls in packaging, logistics, and manufacturing. Until then, remember that alternatives like glass, paper, compostables, and bioplastics appear attractive on the surface, but they have downsides too, so it's essential not to mindlessly refuse all plastics. Still, not all plastics are created equal. If you want a rule of thumb, the higher the resin number, the harder it is to recycle, and the more toxic it tends to be. Those are the plastics that we should target first. When it comes to plastic, do the least harm is the best rule to follow, for now. If we want to survive the human-made Pleistocene era, we need to start at the top of the waste hierarchy. Prevent, reduce, reuse, and only then recycle. That means cutting down on single-use plastics, choosing reusables, and supporting businesses that minimize packaging. Even if we stop burning fossil fuels tomorrow, the scale and value of the plastic industry means that those production lines won't shut off easily. Plastic isn't going away, but with effort and smart policy, we can learn to coexist with it without drowning in it. That means being responsible consumers, but more importantly, it means holding producers accountable. We can't let companies like Coca-Cola sell us the lie that it's all our fault. And how do we stop them from shifting the blame? We get our heads out of the recycling bin and start looking upstream. Thanks for sticking with me to the end of this probably unpopular opinion. If you're into Nuance climate and engineering content that isn't afraid to challenge feel-good narratives, consider supporting our Patreon or YouTube memberships. You'll get perks like Discord access, project updates, and the chance to suggest topics. The more support we get, the more freedom I have to tackle underreported, sponsor-unfriendly stories. I'll see you in the next one.